An alle Aufsichtspersonen. Verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für den Prüfungsteil Hörverstehen. Die Prüfung beginnt in 2 Minuten. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten. Beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt des Aufgabenbogens Hörverstehen. Achtung! Lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Kaufmännische Berufsmaturität 2012, Kanton Zürich, Englisch, Serie 1. This part of the examination consists of 2 different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. Task 1. In the first part of the test, you will hear a radio program discussing the possible effects of poverty on education. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 10 in the notes below. In some gaps, more than one word is necessary for a complete answer. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
Hello, I'm Dan.
And I'm Alice.
And this is 6-Minute English. Today, we're talking about a new report that examines how poverty can affect education.
The report from the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, studies whether there is a clear link between wealth and academic performance.
You'd think that children from poorer backgrounds perform less well at school than children from richer backgrounds, right, Alice?
Well, that makes sense. If you're from a disadvantaged background, then you're less likely to succeed because the situation is unfavourable.
But the OECD report says that in certain countries, children from poorer backgrounds are more likely to achieve good grades and do well academically despite everything.
So it's easier for poorer school students or pupils to achieve high grades in some countries than others.
Exactly. They achieve against the odds. For example, poorer children in Canada and Japan are more likely to achieve good grades than poor children in the UK.
So where are poorer pupils most likely to do well then, Dan?
Ah, that's this week's question actually, Alice. Which country do you think came top in the OECD list for pupils doing well, even when the odds are stacked against them? Was it A, Finland, B, Canada, C, South Korea?
And I'll guess Finland.
Well, we'll see if you're right at the end of the programme. I had the chance to talk to Professor Yvonne Kelly from the University of Essex. She specialises in how economic factors can influence childhood development. So, her research in the UK compared levels of family income with the likelihood of children having social and emotional difficulties.
Social here refers to how people live and work together, and emotional refers to how the children react to their feelings. So the income of a family could affect whether the children have social and emotional difficulties.
And the research also looked at children's cognitive ability skills. That's the way children learn. Cognitive is a scientific term that refers to how we process information.
And what were the findings of this research then, Dan?
Well, Professor Kelly says that children from low-income families were more likely to show symptoms of social and emotional difficulties. She says they can be more restless and clingy. That is, they find it hard to be separated from their parents. In fact, children from poorer backgrounds were 8 times more likely to be restless and clingy than their better-off counterparts.
But Dan, did you not say that some countries have less of a divide between the grades of richer pupils and poorer pupils than other countries?
That's right. Although there's a strong link between family income and how well pupils perform at school, the report says that the education systems in some countries are more likely to help students from poorer backgrounds develop self-confidence to succeed.
OK, so don't keep me waiting, Dan. Which countries are they?
Well, I can tell you that South Korea, Finland, Japan, Turkey and Canada are the most successful countries in terms of poorer pupils achieving high results. But today's question was, which country came top in the OECD list for poorer students getting higher grades?
And I said Finland.
Well, in fact, it was South Korea. In fact, the top 5 places by regional and national school systems are all in Asia. South Korea leads the countries, and Shanghai, Hong Kong, Macau and Singapore are also in the top 5. France, Australia and the US are around average for pupils succeeding against the odds, and the UK is unfortunately well below average.
Oh no, what a shame.
Yeah. Well, that's it for now. I hope you've enjoyed today's programme and you'll join us again for more next time.
Bye.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Hello, I'm Dan.
And I'm Alice.
And this is 6 Minute English. Today, we're talking about a new report that examines how poverty can affect education.
The report from the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, studies whether there is a clear link between wealth and academic performance.
You'd think that children from poorer backgrounds perform less well at school than children from richer backgrounds, right, Alice?
Well, that makes sense. If you're from a disadvantaged background, then you're less likely to succeed because the situation is unfavourable.
But the OECD report says that in certain countries, children from poorer backgrounds are more likely to achieve good grades and do well academically despite everything.
So it's easier for poorer school students or pupils to achieve high grades in some countries than others.
Exactly. they achieve against the odds. For example, poorer children in Canada and Japan are more likely to achieve good grades than poor children in the UK.
So where are poorer pupils most likely to do well then, Dan?
Ah, that's this week's question actually, Alice. Which country do you think came top in the OECD list for pupils doing well, even when the odds are stacked against them? Was it A, Finland, B, Canada, C, South Korea?
And I'll guess Finland.
Well, we'll see if you're right at the end of the programme. I had the chance to talk to Professor Yvonne Kelly from the University of Essex. She specialises in how economic factors can influence childhood development. So, her research in the UK compared levels of family income with the likelihood of children having social and emotional difficulties.
Social here refers to how people live and work together, and emotional refers to how the children react to their feelings. So the income of a family could affect whether the children have social and emotional difficulties.
And the research also looked at children's cognitive ability skills. That's the way children learn. Cognitive is a scientific term that refers to how we process information.
And what were the findings of this research then, Dan?
Well, Professor Kelly says that children from low-income families were more likely to show symptoms of social and emotional difficulties. She says they can be more restless and clingy. That is, they find it hard to be separated from their parents. In fact, children from poorer backgrounds were 8 times more likely to be restless and clingy than their better-off counterparts.
But Dan, did you not say that some countries have less of a divide between the grades of richer pupils and poorer pupils than other countries?
That's right. Although there's a strong link between family income and how well pupils perform at school, the report says that the education systems in some countries are more likely to help students from poorer backgrounds develop self-confidence to succeed.
OK, so don't keep me waiting, Dan. Which countries are they?
Well, I can tell you that South Korea, Finland, Japan, Turkey and Canada are the most successful countries in terms of poorer pupils achieving high results. But today's question was, which country came top in the OECD list for poorer students getting higher grades?
And I said Finland.
Well, in fact, it was South Korea. In fact, the top 5 places by regional and national school systems are all in Asia. South Korea leads the countries, and Shanghai, Hong Kong, Macau and Singapore are also in the top 5. France, Australia and the US are around average for pupils succeeding against the odds, and the UK is unfortunately well below average.
Oh no, what a shame.
Yeah. Well, that's it for now. I hope you've enjoyed today's programme and you'll join us again for more next time.
Bye.
That is the end of task 1. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task 2. In the second part of the test, you will hear an interview with Angela Simpson, a woman who works as a police officer. For questions 1 to 10, mark the best answer A, B or C. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 2. Ready?
In Private Lives today, we meet Angela Simpson. Angela is 29 years old and she was born and brought up in Leeds, a large city in the north of England. Angela is a police officer and she has special responsibility for recruiting young people from ethnic minorities who are interested in a career in the police service. First, we learn a little bit about Angela's background and her childhood in a multicultural suburb of Leeds.
My parents came to England in the 1960s from Jamaica, and I remembered living in the Hare Hills area of Leeds, which I really enjoyed as a child, because of the fact that I distinctly remember that on my left there were neighbours who were Irish, and from there we had people who were Sikhs, Hindus, Pakistanis, African Caribbean, all in this long street. I remember at school that it was quite a multicultural environment, and the fact that I had friends from different backgrounds and different walks of life, and for me, I have really happy childhood memories. It wasn't until I started working that I felt like I was in the minority.
Angela began her working life at Customs and Excise, a British government department which is responsible for collecting duty on imported goods, for example. She had an administrative job and she was bored. When she decided she wanted to become a police officer, her mother tried to discourage her, fearing her daughter would face racial prejudice and sexual discrimination. Angela wasn't put off. Although the training was tough, and she says she found it especially difficult since she was from an ethnic minority background. After police training school, Angela became a foot patrol officer, and her day-to-day duties included dealing with shoplifters, domestic incidents, and road accidents. She worked in a different part of Leeds from where she was brought up, and she explains why.
I would never ever work in the Leeds area that I was brought up in because of the fact that I do know a lot of people there that I went to school with. A lot of people who have been in trouble, and just from some comments that have been said when I've been out with my friends. Especially if someone doesn't like somebody from the police force. Then they're going to say negative things about you. And I've got to think of my family as well, who still lives in that area, which is the most important thing to me, regardless of my job. So I would never, ever work in the Leeds area where I was brought up.
Angela is actually no longer a foot patrol officer on the beat, on duty, walking the local area she was responsible for. She enjoys her new role as a recruiting liaison officer, and she's working very hard to attract young people from ethnic minority backgrounds into the police service. However, Angela is clear that her police work on the beat, some of it with people whose living conditions shocked her because they were so poor, made her a more confident, committed officer and a stronger person.
I was on the beat for 6.5 years, and initially, when I first joined the police service, I was quite quiet, very reserved. Surprisingly enough, yeah, just very quiet-natured, really. And over the years, it's helped me develop my confidence, develop the way I can communicate with people. I think that's quite important because there were quite a few times where initially I thought, well, is this really the job for me? I don't think I can make the grade, but I'm glad that I stuck at it, and it has sort of made me the person I am today.
Police work often means irregular working hours or shifts, so keeping up with friends outside the police service can be difficult. Also, not surprisingly, police officers tend to socialise together when they're not on duty. And sometimes romantic relationships develop.
You will find that police officers, male and female, will actually get together. I think that it's probably because they work quite closely. They're working similar shifts. Sometimes it's very difficult to form a relationship outside the job, especially if the other person doesn't understand the shift system. It's like another family, really. The disadvantage is that sometimes your whole life can revolve around the police service, and I think you've got to be very, very careful that you're not sort of isolating your other friends. I think it's very important to have friends outside the job as well as inside.
Angela's recently moved house, and according to her friends, she's made an unusual choice for an energetic, outgoing young person.
I now live just outside of Wakefield, which is called the Hall Green area, and I live in a bungalow with a front and rear garden, two bedrooms, a dining room, living room, kitchen and bathroom. I've only lived there for a week, but I really like it. It's quiet, which is what I like. Some of my friends have commented and actually said that it's funny I live in a bungalow because a bungalow is associated with someone that's elderly, and it's not really the sort of place that they expect me to live in, but I like it. It's really nice.
On a typical evening in, Angela can be found watching television in the living room. She admits that she doesn't cook for herself very often.
A night in for me would be possibly sitting in front of the television eating a box of chocolates. That's my favourite, really. I'm not a person that cooks very often, and if anything, I do tend to go to my mother's or my friend's house, who lives nearby, and I do like eating out at different restaurants. Chinese, Indian and Italian are my favourites.
To end the programme, Angela talks about her family. They're very close and spend a lot of time together. Angela admires her sister, who's 5 years older than her and a midwife at a local hospital. But both sisters share the same role model.
I think for me, my mother is my role model because she's a very humble person. And the fact that she brought myself and my sister up single-handedly because my father wasn't around, to do something like that is something I'm very, very proud of. And I remember that she's always said that you can do anything you want. Don't let anybody say to you, you can't do that. And she's always strived for me and my sister to do well. And I just hope that, well, in fact, I do know she's proud of me now, although she had her reservations about me actually joining the police force. She's very proud now.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
In Private Lives today, we meet Angela Simpson. Angela is 29 years old, and she was born and brought up in Leeds, a large city in the north of England. Angela is a police officer, and she has special responsibility for recruiting young people from ethnic minorities who are interested in a career in the police service. First, we learn a little bit about Angela's background and her childhood in a multicultural suburb of Leeds.
My parents came to England in the 1960s from Jamaica. And I remembered living in the Hare Hills area of Leeds, which I really enjoyed as a child, because of the fact that I distinctly remember that on my left there were neighbours who were Irish, and from there we had people who were Sikhs, Hindus, Pakistanis, African Caribbean, all in this long street. I remember at school that it was quite a multicultural environment, and the fact that I had friends from different backgrounds and different walks of life, and for me, I have really happy childhood memories. It wasn't until I started working that I felt like I was in the minority.
Angela began her working life at Customs and Excise, a British government department which is responsible for collecting duty on imported goods, for example. She had an administrative job, and she was bored. When she decided she wanted to become a police officer, her mother tried to discourage her, fearing her daughter would face racial prejudice and sexual discrimination. Angela wasn't put off, although the training was tough, and she says she found it especially difficult since she was from an ethnic minority background. After police training school, Angela became a foot patrol officer, and her day-to-day duties included dealing with shoplifters, domestic incidents and road accidents. She worked in a different part of Leeds from where she was brought up, and she explains why.
I would never ever work in the Leeds area that I was brought up in because of the fact that I do know a lot of people there that I went to school with, a lot of people who have been in trouble. And just from some comments that have been said when I've been out with my friends, especially if someone doesn't like somebody from the police force, then they're going to say negative things about you. And I've got to think of my family as well, who still lives in that area, which is the most important thing to me, regardless of my job. So I would never, ever work in the Leeds area where I was brought up.
Angela is actually no longer a foot patrol officer on the beat, on duty, walking the local area she was responsible for. She enjoys her new role as a recruiting liaison officer, and she's working very hard to attract young people from ethnic minority backgrounds into the police service. However, Angela is clear that her police work on the beat, some of it with people whose living conditions shocked her because they were so poor, made her a more confident, committed officer and a stronger person.
I was on the beat for 6.5 years, and initially, when I first joined the police service, I was quite quiet, very reserved. Surprisingly enough, yeah, just very quiet-natured, really. And over the years, it's helped me develop my confidence, develop the way I can communicate with people. I think that's quite important because there were quite a few times where initially I thought, well, is this really the job for me? I don't think I can make the grade, but I'm glad that I stuck at it, and it has sort of made me the person I am today.
Police work often means irregular working hours or shifts, so keeping up with friends outside the police service can be difficult. Also, not surprisingly, police officers tend to socialise together when they're not on duty, and sometimes romantic relationships develop.
You will find that police officers, male and female, will actually get together. I think that it's probably because they work quite closely. They're working similar shifts. Sometimes it's very difficult to form a relationship outside the job, especially if the other person doesn't understand the shift system. It's like another family, really. The disadvantage is that sometimes your whole life can revolve around the police service, and I think you've got to be very, very careful that you're not sort of isolating your other friends. I think it's very important to have friends outside the job as well as inside.
Angela's recently moved house, and according to her friends, she's made an unusual choice for an energetic, outgoing young person.
I now live just outside of Wakefield, which is called the Hall Green area, and I live in a bungalow with a front and rear garden, 2 bedrooms, a dining room, living room, kitchen and bathroom. I've only lived there for a week, but I really like it. It's quiet, which is what I like. Some of my friends have commented and actually said that it's funny I live in a bungalow because a bungalow is associated with someone that's elderly, and it's not really the sort of place that they expect me to live in, but I like it. It's really nice.
On a typical evening in, Angela can be found watching television in the living room. She admits that she doesn't cook for herself very often.
A night in for me would be possibly sitting in front of the television eating a box of chocolates. That's my favourite, really. I'm not a person that cooks very often, and if anything, I do tend to go to my mother's or my friend's house, who lives nearby, and I do like eating out at different restaurants. Chinese, Indian and Italian are my favourites.
To end the programme, Angela talks about her family. They're very close and spend a lot of time together. Angela admires her sister, who's 5 years older than her and a midwife at a local hospital. But both sisters share the same role model.
I think for me, my mother is my role model because she's a very humble person, and the fact that she brought myself and my sister up single-handedly because my father wasn't around to do something like that is something I'm very, very proud of. And I remember that she's always said that you can do anything you want. Don't let anybody say to you, you can't do that. And she's always strived for me and my sister to do well. And I just hope that, well, in fact, I do know she's proud of me now, although she had her reservations about me actually joining the police force. She's very proud now.
That is the end of task two. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening comprehension test. Stop writing and hand in your papers.